Welcome to the strategy session called State Terrorism, and it's my pleasure to be able to introduce the speakers today. We are missing one, but I'm sure he's going to show up shortly. We've got two people scouting out for Webster.
Gabe is trying to reach him on his cell.
Okay, great. Who knows? Maybe he slept in. But he's out there, and he'll be joining us afterwards. But in the meantime, what we're trying to do here is trying to create a quality sound and video recording for as many people outside of this room to catch it later. So please keep that in mind. And the speakers then have to be aware that if standing perhaps over here is going to be better because of the mic here. And we've got mics here. Okay, so are cameramen and women set up, ready to go? Okay. Presenters ready? Yes. Any questions from the audience at all? My name is Ian Woods. I'm the publisher and editor of Global Outlook, and I'm also on the program committee for 911truth.org and Muchka's presentation here at the Chicago conference, 9/11, revealing the truth and reclaiming our future. So it is now my pleasure to introduce the speakers for State Terrorism. And first of all, we have Annie Michon from the UK joining us today. Ian Crane from the UK as well. Chris Samory from Oklahoma City or that neighborhood. I'm going to let them give you their full bios as much as they want to tell you. That way you get it correctly from them. Okay, so we'll start off with Ian. And, pardon?
One more speaker.
The other speaker is Webster Tarpley. Webster Tarpley is MIA at the moment, but he'll be arriving probably during the presentation, and he'll be able to pick up, I'm sure, very easily. So those are our speakers. It's four speakers. Ralph Schoenman here is just sitting in where, in case Webster can't make it, he can help us fill in the gaps. Okay, so anyway, starting off then with Ian, Ian Crane from the UK. There you go.
Actually, we'll just start with the introductions because Annie and I are going to give a joint presentation here. And I think for all of the three of us, Annie, myself, and Chris, we're going to give you a taster because all of us have presentations scheduled tomorrow where we're going to get into some more specifics. Mm-hmm. So this is, if you like, the first layer of the onion. But just to introduce ourselves first, my name is Ian Crane. I'm the chairman of the 9/11 Truth Movement in the UK. And I'm ex-oilfield, 20 years in the oilfield. Spent a bunch of time living in the US, thus my accent is not pure English, unfortunately. Annie's is. What's the oil field? Oil field. Sorry. Is there anybody here that can provide a translation service? I lived in Houston through much of the Clinton years. My partner is from Houston. One of my daughters was born in Houston. Funnily enough, we choose to live in the UK. This is the first time I've been back in the US for about 18 months. Most of my family, my wife's side, live in the Deep South, in Texas and in Oklahoma. And with one exception, who lives in Austin, everybody else, despite the fact they know what I do, they know what my focus in life is, everyone in my family in the US absolutely is still committed to the official version of events. So I honestly appreciate the magnitude of the task that you guys face. And we're here to try and show that there is some UK solidarity with your quest. So, Annie.
Okay. Yeah, hello everyone. I'd just like to introduce myself very briefly as well. My name's Annie Michon, as already stated. Is this working?
No.
Just a prop.
Right,
okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm a former intelligence officer from MI5, so I used to be a real-life spy. I don't know if there are any other real-life spies in here, but I presume they're keeping a very low profile today. I'm also the partner of the MI5 whistleblower, David Shaler, who almost 10 years ago now went public about state-sponsored terrorism, which he had witnessed within MI5. He would love to have been here as well to talk about that personally, but because he broke a law called the Official Secrets Act in the UK, he wasn't able to get a visa in time to come over to the US, because obviously he's a hardened felon. So I'm here in his shoes. I will be talking later today, well, I think it's one of the evening speeches, and also tomorrow. So as Ian said, it's really going to be just a taster of some of the instances of state-sponsored terrorism that we've come across. So with that, I'll pass you back to Ian. Thank you.
Could you just tell us MI5, MI6,
sure.
And when did you stop working?
Have I? Yeah, in the UK we have three major intelligence agencies. There's MI5, which is the Domestic Security Service, which is supposed to protect the integrity of the nation. It gathers decides what to target, it then deploys resources, gathers the information and assesses it for government. And MI6 is sort of the glamorous James Bondy side, well, that's what they like to think. And they are an intelligence gathering agency that operates officially outside the UK, but unofficially does operate within the bounds of the UK as well. And there's also GCHQ, which is the Government Communications Headquarters, which intercepts all our communications. So there's the three of them. Thank you. And yes, one other thing I think you asked was, when did I leave? That was in October 1996, almost 10 years ago. Thank you. Okay, we're going to talk today about state terrorism, and I think we just wanted to start with this Goering quote, because some things never change. It is frightening that it could be stated quite so boldly back in the 1930s, I think, before. Oh, yeah, 40. Or 40s.
Can you read it?
Yeah, sure, if I can. Naturally, the common people don't want war, but after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it's always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is to tell them that they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country. So as I said, some things really don't change. On to the next one. Thanks. Right, this is the new bestest friend of our Prime Minister in the UK, Tony Blair, and of course back welcomed into the international fold. And this is the chap who is really the cause of Dave and myself leaving MI5 and going public with our concerns. This is probably one of the biggest instances we've seen of state-sponsored false flag terrorism. And David, when he was in his last posting in MI5, was the head of the Libyan section. So he was responsible for looking at and countering Libyan terrorism, Libyan infiltration of the UK, and Libyan intelligence gathering within the UK. Now, in that capacity, he built up a very close working relationship with MI6, and with his counterparts in MI6. This is also quite unusual because the two agencies loathe each other. But because of this, he was officially briefed about a plot which MI6 had become involved in to try and assassinate Gaddafi. Now, I'll talk about this a lot more in a lot more detail tonight, but in a nutshell, MI6 handed over large sums of our money, taxpayers' money, to fund an Islamic extremist terrorist group within Libya in an attempt to assassinate the Libyan leader. The attack was illegal under British law, and you'll hear more of that tonight as well. As well as being reckless and immoral, it could have destabilised the whole North African region. And manifestly, it went wrong because Gaddafi is still with us. So innocent people died because of this state-sponsored attack. And, I mean, we're both utterly, utterly appalled that one of our intelligence organisations in the UK could have got involved in terrorism. We were recruited to stop terrorism, to stop terrorist attacks, and to stop the deaths of innocent people. So this attack went ahead in early 1996, and as I said, a number of innocent bystanders were killed. We left in disgust after we saw this. We tried to effect as much change as we could when we were within MI5. Usually we were just told to shut up, keep our heads down, don't rock the boat, and just follow orders. Goes back to the Nuremberg quote almost. So this is why we left, this is why we blew the whistle, and this is also why David and I have become very involved in the 9/11 Truth Campaign, because, of course, this is a very early instance, I think, of a terrorist attack, which would give us a pretext, give the US and the UK a pretext to invade an oil-rich Middle Eastern country. So I think this was one of the first attempts at that. But as I said, more tonight. Again, this is another attack. I think Ian's going to say a few words about it in just a minute. I just want to make one point. David and I were working in MI5 in the Irish section when this bomb went off. This is in April, well, the major one was in April 1993. And again, this is an attack that could and should have been prevented by the spies. They had information about an attack that was going to happen. But more crucially, they had specific information about the guy who set this bomb, the terrorist who blew up the City of London. And they could and should have arrested him 6 months prior to the attack. And they let him go. Now, I don't know if it's just incompetence, that's what we thought at the time, or something perhaps more malign. Because one thing we saw time and time and time again in the Irish conflict was a sort of almost deliberate laxness in MI5's approach. It's almost like they wanted the Troubles or the Civil War to continue as long as possible. It's very much a case of jobs for the boys. And of course, stuff has subsequently come out about collusion in Northern Ireland, where you have agents of the state murdering other agents of the state, where you have agents of the state being involved in terrorist activity. And again, I'll go into more of that tonight, but this is really, I think, another example where they allowed an attack to go ahead at the very least. Thank you. Ian.
These pictures are from the two attacks, first one in 1992 and the second one in 1993. And the second one was the largest car bomb that had ever gone off in the UK. This was an enormous bomb, loaded with military-grade explosive. So the UK, along with Israel, probably has more experience of car bombs than any other country in the world. So in the UK, we're very, very used to seeing the after effects of massive car bombs. Now, as I said, this is a military-grade explosive. So please bear this picture in mind, because I want to move to the next picture and show you something that is definitely not a truck bomb. Now, I'm not going to say any more on that because this is Chris's specialist subject, but I think that the vast majority of people in the UK, when they saw this picture, were immediately sceptical about the magnitude of the damage, because this building was of a totally different construction than the buildings in London, and that the damage was, as you can see, just far, far, far greater. Now, I'm going to leave that one to Chris. Okay, I'm going to... The beauties of PowerPoint is that I'm going to try and touch on subjects that other speakers or other speakers I've heard haven't touched on. So I'm going to try and sort of complement what we were introduced to last night by Alex rather than repeat. And this is the pictures of the Pentagon attack exercise that was run in October 24th, 26th, 2000. And consequently, this belies the fact that any government official, any US government official, could make the statement that nobody ever dreamed that anybody would fly a plane into a building. And I believe I'm correct, I'm sure Alex will correct me if I'm wrong, but I actually believe that the pilot who provided the technical advice on this particular exercise is, by some incredible coincidence, the same guy that was at the controls of Flight 77 when it went into the Pentagon, apparently. I don't think I need to say too much more about that. I think the world saw the American democratic process in play, where George Bush was appointed to the White House by the democratic process of the Supreme Court, electing him by 5-3. Something else happened on that day. On the day that the Supreme Court announced that George Bush would go into the White House, Saddam Hussein announced that from that day he would start trading his limited oil, because he was only allowed to trade under the oil for food program. He announced that he would trade his oil in euros. Over the next 2.5 years, the dollar fell by 20% against the euro. We're going to come back to that in a second. But that happened exactly the same day that George Bush was appointed. Now, moving forward to September the 10th, there were two very, very significant announcements in the American press on that day. And, of course, this one, most of you, I'm sure, are aware of. Donald Rumsfeld announced that the Pentagon cannot account for $2.3 trillion, $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in the US of A. Some accounting program.
It's now way over.
And it probably finances one or two black ops around the world. And, of course, the guy that was actually responsible for the accounts at the Pentagon was the comptroller of the Pentagon, reporting directly into Donald Rumsfeld, and that was Dov Zakheim, or Zakheim, however you wish to say it. And, of course, Dov Zakheim was also a signatory to the PNAC document, Rebuilding America's Defences. And just to say one thing about PNAC, just to compliment Alex's presentation last night, you know, one of the things that we make the observation about, if anybody picked that document up cold, you know, they would think it was the amazing creation of some science fiction writer, you know, dreaming about this sci-fi environment of the future. And, you know, it's totally devoid of any respect for other nations' sovereignty or other cultures, other ways of life, and is totally spiritually bankrupt. And that would be quite an understandable reaction. Until, of course, you look at the back page and you see that the chairman of the PNAC organisation who produced that report was none other than John Bolton, who, of course, is today the United States ambassador to the United Nations. The second announcement that appeared on September the 10th, and this is a whole subject in itself, Mossad are ruthless and cunning, having the capability to target US forces and make it look like a Palestinian-Arab attack. And this was from a report that was issued by the US Army School of Advanced Military Studies, but very significantly it appeared in the US media on September the 10th. And of course we discussed much last night about the concept of the new Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I just want to make a little point about the Mossad connection as well. This is something that David and I saw, again, when we were in MI5 over in the UK. There was an attack against the Israeli embassy in London in July 1994, and the senior officer in MI5 who wrote up the report after the investigation, so he'd seen all the intelligence and all the evidence, came to the conclusion, based on this, that Mossad had bombed their own embassy. Now, it sounds crazy, but, as I said, this was a senior MI5 officer, and he'd seen all the available information. And the reason he reckons that they'd done this was, one, because the Israelis kept agitating for increased security around their embassy in London, and there'd been a huge bomb in Buenos Aires only a couple of months before, so they were really very desperate to get increased security. But primarily, the blame was pinned on two Palestinians who were living in London. And they were very politically active in London. They spent years building up a political support network to raise funds, to raise awareness, to send back to their friends and families back in Palestine. So, of course, they get convicted. They were sentenced to 20 years each, and they are still rotting in prison. And, of course, the whole network fell apart. Everyone else involved ran for cover. So the Israelis, at one blow, shattered the major Palestinian support network in London. It was an amazing coup for them. Now, again, this is one of the issues that David blew the whistle on. And subsequently, information has come out standing up exactly what he said. So you think, of course, the Palestinians would be released from prison, at least pending a retrial. Oh no, not in the UK, because if that happened, David, the whistleblower, would be vindicated. So our government and our intelligence services are screwing up these two innocent people's lives for 20 years each, just so that a whistleblower will not be vindicated in public. I mean, it's just psychopathically sick, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, on that cheery note, that is Mossad for you.
So just to get one more point with Mossad, that's the problem with doing the double act. It always reminds me of something. And obviously, for anybody who's interested in the machinations of Mossad, I would absolutely recommend that you get hold of Viktor Ostrovsky's book, By Way of Deception. And of course, the Mossad motto is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. It's a book written in 1992. The PNAC document, of course, predicts, or states categorically, for the American people to support the agenda that is spelt out in both the Rebuilding America's Defences document and also a Strategic Energy Challenges, which was produced by Dick Cheney and his anonymous team in the first 6 months of the George Bush Cheney administration. I'm not going to say too much about 9/11 because that's the whole point of the conference and you're going to hear many, many discussions of it. But suffice to say that, in my opinion, this is the most brilliant piece of psychological warfare since the Greeks left a wooden horse outside the gates of Troy. And, of course, the American government would have us believe that the similarity continues, because just as the Trojans screwed up by not having intelligence about what the wooden horse was all about, of course, the US government would have us believe that this was perpetrated because of a failure of the intelligence agencies within the US. But there is, of course, no question that it has provided exactly the vehicle and my relatives in the Deep South are living proof, exactly the vehicle that the American administration needed to be able to perpetrate their agenda. And of course, as Alex stated last night, it is spelt out in words of one syllable. And Annie's motto is that all it takes for evil to succeed is for good men and women to do nothing. You remember I told you that on the day that George Bush was appointed to the White House, Saddam Hussein started trading his oil in euros. Well, you will remember this particular moment, of course, when George Bush flew onto the USS Lincoln and did his big mission accomplished statement. This had nothing at all to do with the ground war. This was a statement to the global financial community that from this moment forward, Iraqi oil was once again trading in US dollars. The US dollar subsequently recovered, until such time, of course, as Iran announced that it was going to start a euro-based oil bourse. Subsequently, Putin has announced that he's going to internationalize the ruble and that he will start selling Russian oil in rubles. And the US dollar, of course, is currently in freefall.
I think Putin's starting to do that on the 8th of June.
8th of June.
Yes, at Finland.
I'm going to skim over Madrid and London very quickly because these are the subject of a more detailed presentation tomorrow afternoon. But Madrid occurred on 3/11 of 2004, exactly 911 days after 9/11. Now, as we will show tomorrow when we look at the fake terror templates, you know, the script writers have an obsession with numbers. And they leave clues. It's like Alex said, you know. They know that some of us know what's going on, but it's like thumbing their nose at them, at us, because they believe there's not enough of us to make a difference. This was a very tragic event, 192 killed, over 2,000 injured, but it had a very interesting effect, because the following day, or that evening in fact, 11.5 million Spanish people hit the streets. 28% of the total population of Spain hitting the streets. The elections were 3 days later. The predictions were that the incumbent party, the right-wing party, would get back into power. And they were supportive of the invasion of Iraq. This event and the demonstration swung the result of the election. And in fact, it was the socialists that were brought into power. Now, we're going to talk tomorrow, because a lot of people believe that this was an own goal. And I'm going to present the alternative view tomorrow that suggests that actually the desired outcome was achieved. London, 7-7 last year. In fact, 7-7-7. The year 2005, 2 plus 5, 7. 7-7-7. There's a lot of Kabbalistic symbolism surrounding the event in London. And some of that we'll touch on tomorrow. Much of it was underground, so the impact in terms of the media was less marked than the event in Madrid. So they needed the fourth event to be more visual. And this is the bus, the only bus on the day to be rerouted. And this is the driver, caught on a phone camera. As you can see, the driver has walked away from his cab here. His official story is that he got out of his cab, he walked to the back of the bus to tend to some of the wounded, and then he walked to hospital. Well, the hospital he appeared at is 7 miles away, and he got there in 50 minutes, and London was absolutely in gridlock. So there are some questions surrounding this driver's statement. But I want to draw your attention to a particular part of that bus. Can we go to the next slide? Outright terror. Bold and brilliant. This is the advertisement for the film The Descent, which is a horror film in the genre of Blair Witch Project. Now, is this somebody leaving their calling card? It's exactly like Alex said last night. You know, these guys are basically saying, you know what? We know there's a number of you out there who know what we're doing. It's a few hundred, maybe a few thousand, maybe even a few tens of thousand, maybe even a few hundreds of thousand. But you know what? It's not enough. It's not enough. And it's almost like they're throwing down the challenge. And there's another angle to this, which is a completely different presentation. But from an occult standpoint, this is very, very significant. Because by making it so blatant, and the mass of the population doing nothing, we actually pass the power to them and give them the power to progress their agenda.
Yeah, and the occult, I think it gives them power. This is what working magic.
Was that in front of Tavistock? I was in front, in front of Tavistock Square. So much more of the London and Madrid connection with 9/11 tomorrow. This, of course, absolutely was timed to match these announcements in the British press. Were timed to announce, or to match the George Bush announcement that Iran had weapons or was progressing with a program of constructing weapons of mass destruction and therefore needed to be dealt with. So this is the British media way of sort of saying, yeah, you know, Iran's a problem. So we have here Iran blamed for deaths of 8 Britons in southern Iraq and trained in Iran to kill our boys. You know, very, very emotive. And this is the most popular paper in the UK. Unfortunately, you know, it's one where you need a reading age of about 6. Page 3 is the most famous part of this paper.
Both those newspapers are owned by Rupert Murdoch as well, aren't they?
Absolutely. But what occurred? Next one. Just a few days later, this image was blasted all over the front pages of the British media. And the initial reports were that it was a mob that had attacked the British forces in Basra. The British forces hadn't returned fire. The mob were throwing petrol bombs. And everybody in the vehicle, unfortunately, was seriously burned. But a couple of days later, something else emerged. These two individuals had been chased by the Iraqi police. They'd run a roadblock. The Iraqi police hadn't opened fire, which is their practice. Funnily enough, it's the troops that tend to have a policy of opening fire on vehicles that run past checkpoints. The Iraqis chased it down. They caught these guys, and they found the car was wired with explosive and had a whole bunch, had a whole trunk full of IEDs. Yeah, this is the improvised explosive devices. So they took these guys back to the police station. Can we go? And took their disguises off, and they discovered that they were British troops.
Of course.
And the giveaway was the fact that this guy was stupid enough to be wearing his British issue army boots.
Not just any British troops as well, they were members of the SAS.
So this was absolute evidence of the British participating in the campaign to promote insurgency, to drive Iraq towards civil war. Now, this needed to be got off the front pages, right? And the British media have a tremendous tactic for getting bad news off the front pages and getting it buried into the paper. And unfortunately, the person that took the hit was Kate Moss, because the day after this, what hit the media was that Kate Moss, you know, caught snorting cocaine. And of course, that's what attracts the public attention. And get that slide. Okay. Now, this is... I hope what I'm going to present to you now is from the world of fantastic conjecture. But I said that these guys have a habit of leaving calling cards or following patterns. And we know they are obsessed with numbers. And, you know, this year is the year 2006. In the Masonic calendar, and we don't have time today to get into the detail here, but in the Masonic calendar, this is the year 6006, Anno Lucis, after Lucifer. So, next. The 6th of June is 60606. So I looked at where the zip code was of 60606. Anybody know what that is? Can we go to the next one? It's right here, next one. And not only that, I found a picture that they're going to use harp technology to deal with it. Okay, but that's maybe a bit obvious. So I looked at the next one, which is, can we hit the next? Which is 60666. You know where this is?
O'Hare Airport.
Got it. Okay, but now these guys get cute, and they start to use various permutations. So can we hit the next one? That's where it is, it's the southern side of O'Hare Airport. Next one. Okay, but then if you extrapolate that, you've got 600, and then you've got 6 by 3, or 3 sixes. So you get 60018, and do you know where that is? Right here. Right here. Like I said, I hope this is fantastic conjecture. I'm leaving on the 5th. There it is, Rosemont. Okay. As Alex said last night, something is about to give. You know, I mean, it was there was a lot of internet chatter that it was going to be Houston over Easter. There was a lot of exercises going on around the Houston area back end of 2005, early part of 2006. In fact, there was a lot of speculation that Chicago was going to take a hit at the beginning of May. So, you know, this is a case of be vigilant. And my attitude to this is if anybody picks something up, get it out there. Get it out there. It does no harm at all. Yeah? Because if it's out there, I know Alex tried it. I mean, he was the guy who put out 2 months before 2001 that he saw something coming. But he needs multiple people getting it out there. Now, I'm going to just touch on something here because this, you know, sometimes you get a little sort of hint from somewhere that a subject needs to be raised. And this next bit of this presentation, I've pulled a couple of times from previous presentations, but something occurred this morning that told me that it was appropriate to include this. Now, there's a couple of slides coming up that really, I'm going to issue a health warning because they are very graphic. They're pictures that are not shown in the US. But I want to draw your attention to this. This is out of the PNAC document, page 63, where it says, future soldiers may operate in encapsulated, climate-controlled, powered fighting suits, laced with sensors and boasting chameleon-like active camouflage. I told you it's the work of fantasists, right? Skin patch pharmaceuticals helping to regulate fears, focus concentration, enhance endurance and strength. In other words, drug the poor guys up to the eyeballs so that they don't know what they're doing.
By the way, Afghanistan, they're testing drugs as laboratories.
Now, it's been public knowledge for many years that the American Air Force used amphetamines to keep the pilots awake. The British Air Force denies that it participates in this practice. But here we've got a statement, categorically, that these guys believe that they can enhance the ground forces by developing pharmaceuticals to enhance their performance. Well, it's a short step away from this to literally dehumanizing them. So when you see reports in the paper responding to the Al-Haditha massacre that you're going to give the troops moral training, well, it doesn't matter how much damn training you give them. If they're drugged, they're not even going to be able to give it any second thought. And this morning in the paper was this article, Marines Cleared in the Probe. Yeah. And this responds, this article is about an incident that occurred in March, where the Marines, my heart's starting to beat because I know what's coming. In March, these guys walked into a house and killed everybody in the house because they believed it was the home of a terrorist. There was one male occupant in the house. Everybody else in the house was female or a child. Let me show you, unfortunately, the effect of this. I mean, this is pretty horrific. Okay. The next one is the word. Hold it a second. The next one is serious. And the reason the next one has a marked effect on me is because I have a son exactly the same. I have 6 children. The oldest is 27. The youngest is 3. And then this next one. Excuse me. Let's hit the next slide. This is the one where they're cleared. This is the one where they're cleared, absolutely. This is the March incident. As Alex said last night, you know, we are fighting a battle here. This is the Fourth Reich. You know, the Western countries could not understand after the Second World War how the good people of Germany allowed Hitler to come to power and do what he did. Look around. It's happening here. You know? What is it going to take? Maybe George Bush has to dress in fancy dress. You know, maybe we have to get him to dress up there and get him to carry the flag before people start to appreciate what's occurring. Alex himself has identified the agenda, Operation Endgame. These camps came to the fore, obviously, in the aftermath of Katrina. You know, the US government has assigned $46 million specifically to FEMA to man these empty camps.
It's really called Endgame.
What's it called? Operation Endgame.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but if you go on the internet and you look on the Rex 84, it shows you all this stuff. This one in Indianapolis.
I'm not showing you anything you can't find for yourself.
Right.
And I'd be mortified if anybody took anything I said at gospel. You know, the whole idea is just to give you some ideas to go research. I'm going to close, you know. This is an idea for an exercise. You know, let's tell him it's an exercise. And then let it go live. This is what we're up. We know what we're up against. We know the challenge. Like I said, you know, I've got family in the Deep South. I absolutely understand the magnitude of the task. I don't in any way underestimate it. I admire all the work that you guys are doing. I know what personal sacrifices many of you make to do it. And it's an honour to be here and to show that the UK Truth Movement is right behind you.
Can I have a little help here?
Pass me your laptop.
Hang on to them.